Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
Good morning. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it is an early morning, actually. I am pre-recording our show today, and this happens very often all spring as I am on the road a lot, and sometimes I have to do the program at funny hours, and this is early 6 a.m. here in Florida as I've got my team on the road and trying to get some early season preparation in as and we're traveling around. But anyhow, to those of you who listen to the show live, I apologize, and I'm hoping you're able to pick it up on the UR Tennis Network. Everybody out there, you can Google UR Tennis Network, and it'll bring up every show that we've had, and it'll also sort of give you a listing of what the UR Tennis Network is doing. Jason Haynes, who is the originator of the UR Tennis Network, has a program at 2 o'clock Eastern Time every Wednesday with a college coach. And Lisa Stone, of course, her very popular Parenting Aces program, I believe now is on Tuesday at noon. And I wanted to remind you, I think Tuesday at 11, actually, but Tuesday at noon, right after Lisa's program on the Yellow Ball Network, you can also go to Blog Talk Radio and find J.P. Weber's program of the We Coach Tennis, and it's a very popular program as well. But again, this is an early morning, and I've got a lot to cover. I want to make sure that we the tribute we need to a very fantastic coach who passed away, a better man even than a coach this past year, and that's this past week, Bobby McKee at Lenora Ryan. And Bobby was 33 years a coach at Presbyterian College and at Lenora Ryan, and he was on my first team, actually, at Clemson in 1975, 76, and we called him The Rock, and he was just a solid player, solid man, and golly, we're going to miss Bobby. But I was hoping to have Coach Chuck Waldron on today. I could not get a hold of Coach Chuck. I want to do a tribute show to Bobby McKee, though, and I think that we need to, as many times as possible, do programs for our unsung heroes. And one of the advantages of the UR Tennis Network and the Blog Talk Radio is that these programs that we do will be archived for years and years to come. And our unsung heroes like Bobby McKee, like Clarence Mabry's, Coach Bob Mapes, we've been to a program on him this year, but Coach Bob Mapes, who passed away, Coach Mapes was at Corpus Christi, Texas for years, and he developed a great program at Corpus Christi University. Actually, they were number five in the country at one time, but what a gentleman and a great, great man, and a great teacher of the game and a mentor to so many young coaches, and he did just such wonderful work at the HEB Tennis Center out in Corpus Christi for many years, but you know, Bobby McKee, we want to talk about here in a minute. Let me do my introductions. This is the UR Tennis Network. I'm Coach Chuck Creasy. Every week at Wednesdays, we come to you, usually at noon. But you can go to, on your iPhones, to UR Tennis Network, the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S, Network. And make sure you put Network in there and punch it in, and you can get all the shows. Also, at chuckcreasy.net, my all the programs I put up at chuckcreasy.net, so they'll be archived there, and they're easy to get to. You can also get my blogs, my books, my writings, and some of the things, my camps, actually. If you have youngsters looking for camps, we do a darn good one. It'll be my 38th summer doing tennis camps. So I started all the camps at Clemson University, and they've been very successful. I've had over 15,000 children through my camps over the years, and I give it my best. I'm there every day with them, side by side, trying to help the youngsters. And a lot of college coaches help, and very, very proud of the teachers, the coaches, the mentors that have also developed through the camps that we've had. I'm trying to develop a program called the T3 Mentorships, my total tennis training programs, a wonderful friend, Alex Slezak in Pittsburgh, has been helping me with this, and I want to try to get some of my stuff out there on the internet. This is really a fast learning curve for me. I'm a slow learner with this technology. A lot of times I tell my wife very often I'm a slow learner, but once I get it, I'm very smart. The good Lord gave me the ability to really run with it once I get it, but it takes me a while to catch on to this technology and stuff. So our mission in American tennis is to stand up and speak out every week. We talk from the heart here. We don't just stay with cliches and facts and those things that are fluff. We try to get a little bit deeper. Edmund Burke is my favorite quote, says all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. And if we do nothing, if we just stand and sit on our hands and don't do anything, I read a great quote by William Penn the other day, and I reminded because my good friend Dave Getz visited me in South Carolina, and Dave is just a good and dear friend and a wonderful man. He and his wife visited, but I remember the quote from William Penn that if you're not governed by God, you will be ruled by tyrants. And it's very, very powerful. It's a very, very powerful quote. Thomas Jefferson's quote also I use quite often is that defiance of tyranny is obedience to God. The opposition to tyranny is obedience to God. The freedom that we have in this country is unbelievable, but we need to remember to fight for it every day of our lives. And the freedom to be who you are, number one, our freedom to stand up and speak out, our freedom of speech is a right that we must exercise. If we do not exercise our freedom of speech and the right that so many have died for and what we've been inherited as Americans, shame on us, and we will lose it because it is a funny, funny thing the way that with all of the technology that we have. Folks, I've tried to put a finger on this for so long, and for many, many years I've said that computers have allowed Barney to run Mayberry. In other words, a lot of number two people, not even number two people, have a lot of control and a lot of authority because they basically can use a computer to set up shop. And what I've come to realize, I've tried to can this, and I finally got a handle on it, is there's a big difference between doing things right and doing right things. And computers allow you to do things right. Now, those things that you do right may be right things or they may be wrong things. And that's where people don't like to talk about things. What is right, what is wrong? We live in a relativistic society where you're not allowed to judge, am I right, am I wrong? And this is very dangerous because since they've taken God out of schools, since they've taken basically Ten Commandments out of situation, almost people who follow the Bible with strong teachings are almost chastised now because their firm beliefs in saying, no, this is right, this is wrong. There are absolutes. And we don't like to talk about those things, or most of us do not, because it doesn't validate an easygoing society that basically allows things to just go as they may. And again, with the computers, doing things right does not mean we're doing right things. We may be doing wrong things right, and that's extremely dangerous, and I think that's where we're at now. We need to do right things, and we need to stand up and say, this is right and this is not right. And don't be afraid of the challenge that you get from that. There is a form for doing that. You're allowed to do that. You have a right to do that. People have died giving you the right and me the right to say those things we'd like to say. But doing right things, usually you have to do right things wrong in order to get them right. So ultimately, I tell people, you want to do right things right. You don't want to just do wrong. You don't want to do wrong things right. Do right things wrong. Who's confused out there? Anybody confused? But I think you get the drift. It's more important to stand for some things. And today, I want to, first of all, talk a brief minute about Bobby McKee. You know, Bobby was a person that I first knew when I came to Clemson. He was on the team there for my first year. He was a sophomore, and he he's a small guy, left-handed, solid, great, great volleys. I used to call him the Rock because he was just a solid player. But Bobby transferred to Presbyterian College and played doubles, actually, with Chuck Waldron there, who I've had on the program many times, and Chuck. And he actually went undefeated and went a whole season without losing in doubles. And Bobby was the kind of person that somebody I'd call Waldron, my hard-headed control guy. He's one of these guys that you love to be anywhere with because he's always going to take charge and he'll get you through the tough times. You'd always want to have Chuck Waldron in your foxhole, but Bobby McKee was the kind of person that just allowed people to be who they were, and he's the kind of person that just was the glue of every situation and just a kind, kind man. He could be there half a day and you would say, oh, there's Bobby. Yeah, and Bobby just made things work. And just a kind, kind man with a heart to teach and a heart to give. And Bobby, regardless of your prosperity, your posterity, will live on for many, many generations through the people that you have touched. And Bobby was married 25 years. I only met his wife a couple times, but they had a couple daughters and two daughters, and going on a lot of loss. Everybody's going to feel with this. Bobby had a sister and, a brother. My brother was Richard McKee. I first met Richard in 1970, 72, actually 71. We actually played the University of North Carolina, and Richard McKee was a great, great player there with the Freddie McNair, Richard Hardaway. Who else was on that team? My good friend Mike Curnolo, I believe, was on that team up in North Carolina. Jim Korn, and Jim came right after that group. He might have been on the tail end of that group. But my golly, what a great team. That was a top five team in the country. At the University of North Carolina, Richard was, he and Freddie McNair, I think, made the finals in NCAAs in doubles. And my golly, was he a solid player. And Richard went on to coach at Florida State University, and just also a kind man. The upbringing they got was from their father, Dick McKee, in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Dick McKee taught hundreds of kids, and he was, again, this was old school teaching in those days. Basically, tennis was not your life. It was just a vehicle to teach you about life with these kind of unsung heroes like a Dick McKee, like his son Bobby, who honored the family name so very, very well over the years. And people have asked me, hey, what's sportsmanship? I always say it's real simple. You never bring shame on the game or your family name. And Bobby honored his family name so very, very well. Bobby was extremely close to God, and I was able to text him this last week that he was alive, and he wrote me back, and he just texted and said, Coach, I'm fighting a big battle here, but I put all my faith in my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and I'm okay. He said, I'm just fighting a battle, and just please keep me in your prayers, my family in your prayers. And then he got pretty sick. They diagnosed this thing like in November. And he didn't have much time, but his time here was precious. And those of people who knew him will remember him forever, just exactly what he was. I want to move on, and I need to go to commercial here real quick, and then we'll come back. But tribute to Bobby McKee. Look him up, folks. 26 years at Presbyterian College. Last 7.5 years at Lenoir Ryan, North Carolina. The McKee family. We all lost a lot. But we gained so much throughout Bobby's life. And we'll be right back to American Tennis as Coach Chuck Creasy.
Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Says USA. America.
Making them in America, American tennis. I think that if I could ever pass on anything about our program on the UR Tennis Network with American tennis, it would be to give everybody and anybody listening out there the unwavering understanding that you have the right to be who you are, to stand up, to speak out, because you're in the United States of America. And with that, fight for the freedoms. Fight for small freedoms as well as big freedoms. Freedom doesn't mean arrogance. It doesn't mean opposing somebody's viewpoints just because they have it. Freedom just means that God made you number one in the world at being you. And that is your right. That is our duty, to stand up and to say those things that we need to say. Always just stay professional, address issues, not people. As mad as you get people sometimes for what they do, in the end, we are all just forgiven sinners. I mean, I'm early in the morning here, and it's overwhelming to think of the things that I've done in my life and that I'm forgiven for, and all of you out there too. All we have to do is accept the fantastic sacrifice that we've been given by the sacrifice of Christ. And we're just forgiven sinners. And I'm a natural born sinner, folks. I don't know about you guys out there, but I was born to screw up, and we spent a lot of time trying to get it better and trying to do it right. And I think that if we start with that premise, that humble premise, is that really just trying to, it's pathetic for us to try to do good just because we want to get one-upsmanship on another. You know, we need to want to do good because it's a calling, that we don't want to bring shame on our family name, but also it's a calling to try our best to do those things that are righteous and good. And I know about Bobby. His life is not, they'll have his records in a record book and all that, but basically people remember him for the man that he is, and the coach and the leader and the mentor of others. So, all right, well, look, folks, I want to talk today about developing a program, old school development of tennis in 2015, and what we need to do in coaching, and how we go about trying to take this on. And I've got to say, you know, out of the blocks, that most of the coaching that I've done, we all have a mixed bag of where we get our training and how we get our training. We get out of books, we get it out of being around good mentors, but a lot of us get it by being athletes ourselves and by saying, hey, listen, if I ever had a chance to do this, I'd probably do it this way or whatever. But I have down here, as you develop your coaching program, the most important thing is to, number one, develop your own philosophy, that it must be yours, it must be unique. And as much as I've probably taken things from reading the book, They Call Me Coach, John Wooden, reading Bobby, the book on Bobby Knight, Season on the Brink. Oh, did I love that book, written by, I think it was Feinstein, John Feinstein, back in the 80s, about the season, 87 season and those things. Reading about Vince Lombardi, seeing Vince Lombardi actually as a child coaching on TV. I was lucky enough on TV, they used to, in Indiana, they used to show the Chicago Bears every week. So I would see, George Halas there on the sidelines. If you remember Bill Wade, Willie Gallimore, I got to see Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo on television. Bill George, my golly, these names come back to me, of course. Mike Ditka and these. But then Paul Brown, with the watching Jim Brown play. And, so as a young boy, I can remember watching all these, and I was crazy about Indiana basketball, so getting to watch those things as well, you develop your philosophy based on these things. And if you have an inquisitive mind, you're always role-playing, say, hey, if I was in this position, if I was in that position. I can remember as a young boy, actually, I remember making notes when I'd come home from a basketball game, a fifth and sixth grade basketball team, or they used to call it the 78 basketball team, the cadets. I remember in seventh grade, a 13-year-old making notes about, hey, if I was the point guard instead of this guard, what I could do, and different things like that. And I think that plays a big part of how you develop your coaching philosophy. Of course, the coaching philosophy has to do with the values or the work ethic you grow up with, too. And I've always known that it was part, you know, the good Lord gives you so much ability, the good Lord gives you opportunities, and then you have to try it up with your work ethic. So it's sort of always been partly ability, partly opportunities, partly the desire, and you have to do those things. But number one, you've got to be you. Number one, you got to develop your own philosophy of coaching. And I know that I've developed mine, and this becomes a private thing. And even though we learn throughout a career, it's something you don't let anybody take away from you. You adjust it as you go through your years. But the only way you can really have pride and walk around strong is by being number one in the world of being yourself. Yeah, copy those ideas and those things that others do, but if you have your own number one philosophy, just like allowing your players to play their own game, if you allow players to play their game, they're going to feel good about it. They'll do it most naturally. And even though you take ideas your whole life, develop your own philosophy. That I wanted to say that, you know, number one. Number two, it's got to be your vocation and not just a occupation. It's got to be something that coaching isn't just a job. I heard people, somebody tell me as I got later in my career and got older, saying, well, just treat it as a part-time job. You know, you're getting older now. Just enjoy it. And I said, are you kidding me? If I was a volunteer coach and making no money, and I was working, and I do work with seven-year-old girls, some little girls sometime, and little guys too as well. And when I work with little kids, I put my whole heart into it, just like I would if I was coaching on the pro tour, or just as I did when I was able to coach at some of the Grand Slams and major tournaments around the world. And I don't care who you're working with, and what level they are, it needs to feel the same. I get the same thrill, and you do too. I know you do if you're a coach out there. You get the same thrill out of that 10-year-old or that 12-year-old doing well as when your 18-year-old wins a gold ball or your college team wins a big match. And it's really, if you don't, then you need to sort of back up and say, wow, wait a minute. The hype of this is not as good as that thrill of seeing people just get it. And Ed Dixon, who's a great friend of mine, he coaches Brevard College right now, but he was at Purdue, West Virginia, and he's coached for many years. But he said, I was hooked on coaching. The first time I was able to help people on the court get their backhand right or something, and I remember the buzz that I got. Made me feel as good or better than winning matches myself. And he says, that's what I knew. And so develop your philosophy and understand it's got to be your vocation, not just an occupation. Number three, diamonds take time to make. Rhinestones blow away faster than anything you can imagine. You have to understand that diamonds are made with pressure. Diamonds are made with time. Today I'm training my players. Again, yesterday was our first workout in about 5 or 6 weeks. Thanks to those good old collegiate rules we have. My golly, I haven't been able to train my guys for about 5 or 6 weeks. Give me a break. Can you imagine piano players or band members or orchestra leaders or artists or something not getting to do their work for 6 weeks? It's just pathetic that we manage, overmanage, micromanage college sports as we do. It's pathetic. Sure hasn't made it better, has it, folks? How many? Just take a look how many Americans we have in the top 100. It's laughable. 39 in 1986. What, 3 now? Okay. In the women's side, it's been 20 years since Lisa Raymond played. Yeah, we're really taking a stand for excellence, haven't we? Just pathetic. Look, diamonds take time. They take pressure. Take hard work. And, you know, with that, understand that it's the long haul that you have to get in this thing for. And usually you have to do the right thing a lot of times with failure before you. And what I'm talking about there, again, is doing the right things and wrongly, as I alluded to earlier in my program. You got to do the right thing with failure a long time before you get the right thing right. If you get wrong things right in a hurry, that can surely throw you off quickly, too. So you better be careful about not selling out in those early times. Long-term vision I have written here. You know, goal setting is a funny thing. You know, people say there's magic in goal setting. Yeah, there is, but I've seen people put up artificial goals a lot that just really blow away quickly, and they don't sustain. A long-term vision, and I have it right now. And, you know, I'm promoting my program and coaching my program every day. I think about 4 or 5 things, and I see the vision of where it's going to go and where the destination is. And the Covey 7 Habits for Highly Effective People of the 80s. Y'all remember that book, the Covey 7 Habits? You start with the end in mind. Here's what I know that successful people do. Successful people say, here's where we're going. Now let's work backwards and take care of the obstacles that we will have to deal with. People who are not successful say, well, you can't do that because we have this, and if you do this, then this will happen, and this will happen. And right away they're defeated before they even take a stand and try to go forward. But here's the deal on long-term vision. Now, I want to talk about goals too, but the long-term vision has to be that you know where you're going and you solve the problems on the way. And this is a critical, critical thing. Here we hear what I'm saying here. If you knew or I knew how hard things were when we started out, would we ever really go after them? And then you could use this with your job, with a marriage, oh my golly, with raising children, oh my golly, the heartbreak of coaching. Would you really get into coaching again if you knew how many times your heart was going to get ripped out and stomped on? It is so hard. It just, if you care and if you dare, the pain is always there. It's just part of the deal. Pain is part of the deal. But here's the trick with coaching, or here's what I think is the method more than this. I don't like the word trick. The method is don't always show people how hard it is before they do it. If we all knew how hard things are, we don't start. Now, the reality of the computers and the reality of the kids looking at their cell phones all the time, and they can Google, and by the way, everything you get on Google is not true. You know that. They just put everything up there. A lot of it is not. But they can Google how hard things are. And they'll say, okay, I want to go after this mountaintop, and then they Google it and go, but on 1,000 feet up, you're going to run into this obstacle. 1,500 feet up, you're going to run into this obstacle. 5,000 feet, you're going to run into this obstacle. By the time they start climbing, they say, wow, is the payoff really worth the pain? I've always, prize has a price, every price has a pain, and pain is just part of the deal, and it is. And you basically, the sport will not allow you to succeed without some pain. It's almost the admission you have to pay or the dues that you have to pay if you want to be successful. But here is the key as you climb this mountain. As a coach, as best you can, you keep fog on top of that mountain so the kids are too high up to turn back. Do not show them how hard everything is. Now, with that scheduling, I'm going to talk about scheduling here in a minute, but scheduling is incredibly important, that you know when, how, and how much to give the players and what to do after they succeed and what to do after they fail. Scheduling is incredibly important. So now the long-term vision, again, we were said develop a philosophy. Most know that it's your vocation. Understand that diamonds take time to time and pressure to make. Your long-term vision has to be outlined with short-term goals. Now, your short-term goals, goals and objectives basically are process goals of how you go about things. They're not product goals of, hey, I'm going to be number one by this year and number three by that year, and I'm going to beat this person and this person and this person. That, look, those things are going to be there anywhere. But you basically set goals of the level that you want to be at and of the objectives of the work you want to do. They're process-driven, not product-driven. You know, and talking about being driven, golly, and this goes back to understanding that your coaching is a vocation, not just an occupation. It's ask yourself, are you being led or are you driven? Think about these two things. Are you led to do the work? Are you led? Believing in something bigger than yourself. Is this about you serving the sport of tennis, serving youngsters with the sport of tennis? Giving of yourself, and are you led to do this? You know, being led is a source of permanent and absolute power. It's independent of fluctuating results and fluctuating circumstances that go up and down, can have failure after failure after failure in other people's eyes, but you persist and move on because you're led to do something that's bigger than yourself. Now, being driven is goal-oriented and in a way that you can get things done, but it's, in the end, it's not so healthy. Yeah, I got to tell you, I was up at 3:30 in the morning trying to get ready for the program this morning, since this is, I'm doing this early morning program. So with that, guess what program was on TV? The movie Chariots of Fire, Best Picture year. I think it was about 1979, 80, and there was early 80s, and I can remember taking a team of mine to see it. And I don't think that there are many other great sports movies that have such an accurate description of the difference between being driven versus being led, as the total difference of Harold Abrams, who was the driven sprinter, and Eric Little, who was the man who was led by, you know, his basically his drive, I don't want to say drive, his inspiration to glorify God with his running. I mean, the quotes in that movie are just unbelievable, aren't they? You know, God made me fast, and with that, he says, when I run fast, I feel his pleasure. It's just those, that was so fantastic, the quotes and the one line in there. Anyhow, so with that, I think it's a big difference between being driven and being led. Again, develop your philosophy. Basically, understand this vocation, not just an occupation. Understand making diamonds take time. Have a vision. Have a long-term vision that use daily goals. Understand that being driven and being led are two different things. Now, here's the thing, as you get into the day-to-day routines of coaching. You know, I one time had a, well, this has happened a lot of times, but I remember things got so complicated in coaching as you create a monster and then you've got to feed it, and pretty soon they say it starts to devour you if you don't stay organized. And on the creative side of things, the good Lord has given me really good abilities. On the organizational side of things, I have had to use every skill set around me to try to stay up above and beyond. Writing my books, I tell people about how I wrote my first book in 1988 before computers. My living room, I lived in it, and I had piles of paper everywhere possible with note stickers that said, this part is on training, this part is on momentum control, and this part here, other thing, and I connected them all and had to write stories, but it was basically something visual that I had to do, and it was pretty interesting. I've kept all those notes. It's about three foot high, but the bottom line on this is that I've learned that you really have to get your time set to where you know what to do and what part of the day. A couple good books to read out there. Best books I ever read when I started coaching. First was called Winning Images. It's actually, you can still get that on Google, and it was a little paperback book, but it basically taught me a whole lot. It started out by saying 90% of the people that you meet will never visit where you work. And you need, from the way you answer the phone, to the way you present yourself in public, to the image that they have, has to be something that is a successful image, that is a strong image, that is an image of success. And now this doesn't mean that the image rules. I hate that image is everything. But Winning Images is a very good book. You have to have some substance behind it. But with that, I realized that there was only so many hours in the day. Winning Images in a book called Getting Things Done taught me sort of how. In the Covey's Habits, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, that's a good one, folks, if you're in there coaching and you get cluttered during the day. If you haven't read that, reread it. Reread it if you read it and haven't read it. Take the time. But I remember it categorized things into important or urgent. And those things that are urgent and important are the most important things. And those things that are not urgent, not important, you'd put off till last. But the critical element is, do you do the things that are urgent, not important? That's where we fail, most of us. If you do things important, not urgent, and do the long-term planning things after the important and urgent, that's how to be successful. So those books are the best one. So I made this list about my coaching activities and coaching things that I have to do every day. I said, number one, the most important thing is player development. Number two, second most thing is get the right players into the program. Not always the best. Get the right people around you. Get the right people. Now, yeah, you want to have talented people. And you want to have the right players around you. A friend of mine says, you know what makes great coaches, don't you? Great players. Well, yeah, that's true. It's easier when the players are a little bit better. And, if they're not higher maintenance and they don't suck the life out of you and the program, if they're givers, yeah, that's true. But getting the right players is the most important thing I've always believed. Player development and getting the right players. Number three is getting the right experiences for the players, getting great schedule, getting them on the right path, understanding how to break the season. And I always break the season when I do my schedule into four parts. I'll come back to that. Then number four, be attentive to all the needs of your boss, your administration. Many of the bosses out there will cringe maybe. We say, oh boy, that's number four on this coach's list. Well, it's a high priority, but the fact of the matter is if you don't develop the players, you're not going to have a job. If you don't get better players, you're not going to have a job. You've got to get a great schedule and the right experiences for the players, or they're not going to get better. If they don't get better, they're not going to win anything of importance. That's why the only reason I put be attentive to the needs of administration. Look, the administration has to do things right. And this is, it's important to understand that you've got to pay attention to the chain of command. You've got to do those things and understand that regardless of whether you like that boss or not, the person who's sitting in that position, you have to honor that position and get the things done that they want you to get done. And unfortunately, those people who are sitting behind desks in the administration these days have so many knick-knack things on them that you're forever just fighting land little flash fires. And you're doing these little things that can be big things, but really they're, I hope my boss didn't listen to this. And they understand. I'd go by and see my boss every day. Here's the thing you can do. Go by and see your boss every day and just say, hey, what do you need today? How am I doing? What's up? Is there anything urgent? Just every day. And I try to do that to just make sure that we stay, keep that communication line open. Because if you don't, it creates a big fire. But again, player development is number one. Getting the right people around you is number two. Hey, can I say something real quick about that? Number one people hire number one people. Number two people hire number three people. If you're number one person, you want strong people around you. You want assistant coaches that are going to be head coaches. You want people, I always tell my assistants, you're a head coach with an assistant title. I always tell my assistant coaches and people work for me also, folks, I'll tell them, and I'll say, I'd rather give you forgiveness than permission. Don't you dare wait around for me to just give you directions. And are you going to screw up? Yeah, you better screw up a lot. I will always go to battle for you if you do things honestly and with integrity and with the intention of what we're trying to do with our program. But if you do not hang around and be a gopher that just waits for direction, you're a number one person, act like it. And with that, you empower people around you, they will hold you up in esteem. If you the rug out from under people and you have to be a control freak, you really, really are going to do an injustice there to the people who work for you. Number one, player development. Number two, get the right people. You get the right players. Get the right people around you. Those people who have a vocation, those people that will are servants and believe in giving to others. Getting the right schedule, the right pathway. Be attentive to your administration. And then number four, the promotions and creating the winning image and managing the fluff and all the stuff that comes with it, that just takes a while. That's the promotions and those things are come after those. So I prioritize these. I used to have a big old sign on the back of my wall behind my desk where only I could see it. And this helped me as things got cluttered throughout the day. You know what I heard, too, that was a great thing? I heard, and I started to do this, but never, ever, ever look at your emails before about 10 in the morning. Try to get in and get 2 hours of work done at your desk. Do not look at an email, because what happens? You know what happens? You get on that email or that Facebook. Oh, gosh, Facebook could just take you into Never Never Land, doesn't it? But you get on the email and it takes you in a direction completely different than you've been, and it just really swamps you for the day. One of the other things that's pretty cool is just pay attention to that list and prioritize that list of things to do today. Do it at night as you're sitting there watching the news or just scribble it out in the morning. Just make sure you have these five things I want to try to accomplish. That helps a bunch. But again, folks, if you don't develop your players, forget it. You're not going to prosper. You've got to get the right people around you. You've got to get the right schedule. Okay, so let's talk about this little bit and give a few quick pointers. All right. with developing the players. And I don't care if it's management, coaching, administration, being a player. There's three things that you consider, and I did this past weekend with the parents of a player, and they always come to me with the same question: Coach, does my son, my daughter, have enough to be successful? And I always say it's ability, opportunity, plus desire. God-given ability, you can't do anything about it. You can't put in what the good Lord left out. Please rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, I'll tell the youngster. And I let them rate it. Forget the parents, because the parents, they really either see more or see less than what actually is. And let's say the person on a scale of 1 to 10, the youngster says, okay, I am this particular youngster says, I'm an 8. I know I'm a little bit better than most, but I'm sure not the best. It's okay, now opportunities, what, and tell me about your parents, how many opportunities have they given you? Do they give you a chance for lessons, for playing, for tournaments, for training? This in particular, this youngster said, well, they gave me a 9. I said, okay, that's good. All right, now let me ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your desire? And this youngster said, I know, I'm only a 6. It's okay, let's add this up. 8 plus 9 is 17 plus 6, that's 23. Okay, 23 out of a possible 30. Now look, I've done this for years and years, and let me tell everybody out there, the magic number, if you want the formula for success, is 23 to 25. If the person's got 23, they're on the bottom end there. 25 plus, they can go to the moon. And on these three areas. And this person, of course, they go, oh, I'm a 23. I said, yep. I said, you're having some success, right? But you're a little disappointed. They said, yes, coach, I am. I said, all right, now let's look at your 6. Let's not say you got to be a 10 right away or 9 right. Hey, how do we get this 6 to a 7? And I had the youngster say, well, I'm going to get up in the morning and start getting 1,000 jump ropes. You know, how long does that take? 7 to 10 minutes. Okay, I'm going to do that 3 days a week. Just start with that. Try to get your desire from a 6 to a 7. By the way, parents, you guys back off a little bit. Your job is opportunity. Do not try to keep influencing your youngster by putting more and more pressure on them, try to force feed them this, you know. So, yeah, y'all understand how this goes? Recently, I had a pretty cool thing happen with my team member. I was explaining this, and I asked the team member first. I said, okay, academically, how much ability did the good Lord give you? And they said, coach, I know I've always done well in academics. I got to say it's a 9. So, yeah, you're right. Look at your grades, 3.93. And then I said, okay, about opportunities. Yeah, my parents sacrificed. They could send me this private school. I was able to take these very, very AP classes, and the strong, everybody there was going to go to good schools. And, all right, well, what kind of opportunity did you have? And the youngster, he said, well, 9. So, okay, God gave you a 9 in ability, opportunity. Your parents gave you a 9. Okay, how much desire? Coach, I give my best. I'm 9, that's 27. You're on your way, buddy. And he is. I bet my farm that he's going to go to the moon as an engineer or, you know, as a leader. And I said, okay, in tennis, let's see where you're at here. Okay, tennis, how much? The Lord gave me about this much ability. Okay, I'm only at 6. All right, that's good. Now tell me how about opportunities here. Well, I got to go to a good school. I'm in, you know, the state of Florida. I got this, okay. Actually, coach, I'm probably a 7 with my ability, but I think I got a 9 here. No. Now, coach, I'm not that good. He says, I think probably a 7 plus about an 8. All right, I said, well, what is that? That's 15. And I said, how much effort are you giving right now? I've been given a 7. I ain't going to cut it, buddy. He said, oh, with an 8. And since that time, we had this meeting in the fall, he's been giving an 8 or 9. And I said, okay, you're doing 23 or 24. And his game is just taking off. It's really cool to watch. But again, folks, as a coach, try to understand it's those three things. And you can't do anything about ability. You can't put in what the good Lord left out, and that's constant. But actually, desire and opportunity work against each other. A lot of times when the kids get too many opportunities, their desire suffers. When they get less opportunities, you would think that they get hungrier, but it's a tricky thing now. I've always said the only thing worse than a lazy person's been given everything, a rich person's been given a lot. Somebody lazy is a poor person that's lazy. You never ever want to give things to people without them working hard for it. I can't tell you the nightmares I have from having given scholarships away to kids. You know, I just think that they're going to take off and run with it. And people do not appreciate what you give them for free. Make them work for stuff. Make them work for stuff. So, and that'll help a lot. A couple quick things, though, Bill, about player development there is that'll help you there. We're going to talk about some training tools and things and programs to come. Get the right players. With the players, you've got to get those that are willing to be compliant and then go from compliance to being committed to being inspired. If you can't get them to being inspired, it's really, really hard to develop a player into something that is quality. Schedule, right schedule and right path. Last week we had Coach Randy Blumendahl on the program, and really interesting what he said. He said, you know, unfortunately we've made tennis, it's not a sport anymore in many instances because of a lot of the wrong people being in leadership. They're making it into an activity, an after-school activity. And I would say, I'm going to come out on to you coaches out there and coaches in high school. I'm going to challenge you. Make your high school team a sport again. Do not make high school tennis an after-school activity. And, man, I tell you, folks, I am really against this no-cut program for high schools. Look, I don't ever cut players, but I make them earn everything. don't let people just hang around and don't not earn their way. Anyhow, getting the great schedule. We're going to have to talk about scheduling next time, but these five things, player development, get the right players, get a great schedule, but and then be attentive to your administrators and then managing the fluff. We're going to talk more about coaching 2015. Really, these are old school methods in a modern era. And remember, old school is not old fashioned, and it surely does not have to be. Well, I'm going to leave this for now. Remember that coaching is a vocation. It's not an occupation. You're in one of the greatest professions ever created, and sports are our last bastion of really accurate measurement for our youngsters. They love it when you work them hard. They love it when you make them suffer for what they get. If you make them work for what they get, they'll relish it forever. If you give them things that they haven't worked for, they will be upset about it later, and they'll resent it. They really will. Make everybody work for what they get. That's the most important thing. I gotta go. Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his tombstone. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America. Coach Chuck Creasy, and reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Thanks very much for listening today to American Tennis. We'll be back next Wednesday at noon on the UR Tennis Network. Keep Bobby McKee family in your prayers, folks. God bless each and every one of you for the work you do.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.